Let's do it. Hi folks, this is Christian with another episode of Ice Age Farmer Podcast. As always, mapping a path forward to prosperity, building resilient, self-sufficient communities, and sharing knowledge in the grand solar minimum. Today is August 15th, 2017, and this is episode 9 of the Ice Age Farmer Podcast. Buckle your seatbelt and put on a jacket. It's going to be a heck of a show. August is 20 degrees cooler than 1936, which is why the geopolitical distractions are absolutely heating up. There's a lot to cover today, so I hope you can sit back and have some fun and absorb some of this information. Today we're going to start, as always, with our daily steps. We'll hear from the community, what people are doing, how they're getting ready for the times ahead. Today, some thoughts on potting soil and the ingredients for making the best one you can imagine, and on alternative buildings and what might work best. We'll also then move on to the icebreaker section. Today we'll be talking about 1360, the lightning and hail that took out an English army during the Hundred Years' War. As well, we'll be discussing some ground reports, information coming in from folks who are experiencing side effects of the changing climate. A greenhouse collapse today. We'll look at that under the weight of snow. We'll hear what happened and how they're going to be moving forward. Then we'll dip into the news. Headlines that I feature at twitter.com/iceagefarmer. As the season ends here, there's a plethora of data coming in around crop yields and extensive crop losses. And we'll look through some of that. Also, I'll be covering the bubonic plague, which has been detected in fleas in Arizona. And I'll speak also to the censorship that's coming down. Many of us have heard about YouTube clamping down, demonetizing. Folks, it's not just on the right or the left. They are locking down information sources on both sides of the aisle. Basically, anything that does not conform to their narrative is going to be very hard to find, if not completely taken offline. And that is why I make Ice Age Farmer Podcast available not just on third-party platforms, YouTube, Twitter, iTunes, Stitcher, but I also host everything directly at iceagefarmer.com. We'll be doing a little bit of an abbreviated special today. I'll talk about how to hack plant growth, and then I'll be taking a single question. Send yours in to iceagefarmer@gmail.com. Today's question is just a quick one on Bitcoin. Do I trust it? Is the essence of the question. Before I do all that, I'd like to remind you, especially given the clamping down, the iron fist of censorship, that you can find Ice Age Farmer, as I just mentioned, on YouTube, which is iceagefarmer.com/YouTube, and on iTunes, iceagefarmer.com/iTunes, and Stitcher, iceagefarmer.com/Stitcher. There's a theme here, yes. Because I'm trying to make it extremely easy to find, subscribe, and spread the word about this show. If you enjoy it, please do so, so that more people can become enlightened as to what's actually going on here with the climate change, and start to take steps to ensure that they and their families are also prepared in the future. Given the extensive crop losses that we will be talking about today, it absolutely makes sense to spread this information to as many people as you think are able to hear it and accept it and work with it. And even then, to just put the kernel of an idea, as we've talked about before, into other people's heads so that they can start to grow that and eventually come to the realization on their own time. All right, let's get into the first segment here, which is the daily steps towards self-sufficiency. Reports from the Ice Age Farmer community, as we share our experiences and our lessons, as well as just talk about the progress we are all making towards increasing our food security for the times ahead. Little Red Hen writes in that her carrots are currently going to seed, and she plans to be saving those seeds for casting them out in January of next year for next year's carrot crops. P.P. Bernstein has also chimed in on the potting soil question from episode 8. Her compost is comprised of kitchen scraps, horse manure, and leaves. She leaves it on the ground and adds horse manure to cover the kitchen scraps. And she mixes that with azomite, vermiculite, coconut core, and perlite. She also waters that compost pile to keep it moist before adding it to the worm bin. and also adds that she left it outside all winter with a plastic sheet covering it, and somehow those worms were able to withstand the cold. So that sounds like a pretty good potting soil compost recipe there. Cheryl also writes, and again, in response to the alternative building methods that I mentioned in episode 4, I also have an interest in alternative building, and some other types of buildings would be monolithic domes. These would be my first choice, but they cost more than do-it-yourself. They are beautiful, stand up to all weather, including hurricanes and a class 5 tornado, and are very efficient for energy use. Currently, I live in a geodesic dome and can personally attest to the dome shape being very easy to heat. She also mentions earthbag buildings because cob buildings, which she loves, aren't really the best insulated, and if things are going to be getting colder, then that might not be the best choice. Similarly, she observes the earthships are wonderful, but if the hail we're seeing is going to continue, then the glass on those might not be the best. Instead, she offers anything that can be earth-bermed or buried would be a good choice to help with the heat and the cold, actually. If the EMF goes nuts or the lightning continues to get more intense, earth shelters might help mitigate that. Mike Oler wrote a book and actually has a video. If you look for Kirsten Dirksen on YouTube, you can see some of his work. And he has spoken about how to build earthen shelters very inexpensively and also has some good ideas for how to get light into them, even when they're underground. She likes clay, straw clay for insulation and breathable walls. Aircrete looks like it has lots of potential, especially if it's used as a building brick to a dome. Thanks for all the work you're doing and sharing. Yeah, thanks for writing in. I'm familiar with Mike's work, the $50 and up underground house book. You can find it for free. You can find an ebook copy. Just go ahead and search $50 and up underground house book PDF, and it will pull up right away. But for those of you who are interested in obtaining a hard copy for reference, if the power goes out or for whatever reason, I will drop a link to it below. Thanks for writing in with those things. Personally, I am in Germany. Suddenly, I had to drop everything to come be with family and help my father-in-law transition, hopefully, to a better life than the pretty tough one he's had. There's a lot of logistics to work through, dissolving an estate in a foreign country. And so this is, it's hard for me, both because, you know, for the obvious reasons of dealing with a loved one's loss, gradual loss, but also because I'm so much talking about taking steps every day towards self-sufficiency and building a more resilient future. And that's obviously difficult to do when you're a world away from your homestead. What time I have had here, I've been using to catch up on research and follow up on some of these pointers. Most notably, the electroculture, which I'll discuss later in the plant hacks segment. That said, it is healthy and informative to see Germany through, you know, both through my very Texan American eyes, is always fun, but also through the Ice Age farmer eyes. They have even folks who are in apartments often go out of their way to also rent a Schrebergarten, which is a little plot of land, just they're usually groups of them, and you rent a plot of land and go and take care of it on your own. So it's separate from your apartment and you travel to it. And they kind of were, you know, talking to locals, they went out of style, went out of fashion for a while there, but much like the local food and organic food movements have been growing lately, so too has the Schrebergartens been regaining popularity lately with folks who want to grow their own food. It's not something that I've seen stateside, but it's cool to see. And boy, they take it, you know, they really take it seriously. There's a lot of pride in the gardens I see here. And I'll be doing a video on some of those. I'm also here, oddly, just down the street from a Demeter-certified biodynamic farm. These biodynamic practices it's like beyond organic. They incorporate also sort of a spiritual element. It derives from anthroposophy and sort of bleeds into the Waldorf school of philosophies, Rudolf Steiner's work. There's a lot there. I'll be doing a video on these as well since I'm here and would like to share that with you. What about you? What steps are you taking to ensure that you will have food and security in the times ahead as the climate continues to change and folks are going to be very disappointed to find that the modern agricultural systems, the just-in-time supply chains we've constructed, are already, in fact, breaking down? How are you now, today, taking steps to ensure that you'll be able to weather this storm? Let me know, iceagefarmer@gmail.com. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to subscribe. And when you do so, hit that bell. I have actually had folks report to me that their subscriptions have been disappearing and or notifications have been missing despite using the bell or things missing from search results. So just make sure to hit that bell and at least we'll do what we can to get the information out there. With that, let's go on to the ground reports. I did hear from Ferd, who wrote in from the Hot Springs area in Arkansas, confirming that during the last few weeks, the entire South has been experiencing far below average temperatures. This is actually something we'll cover in the news section as well, but it was nice to hear directly from both from Ferd and then some other folks. And then I wanted to cover David at Oppenheimer Ranch, put up a video and included a bit of a story. I would highly recommend that you subscribe to his channel. Check it out. I featured a link to it from mine, which you can get to at icehfarmer.com/YouTube, and then find the Oppenheimer Ranch project. David reports, and I've got a link to this video in my show notes as well, about a $1,500 Alpine Glacier Series greenhouse. I'm sorry, that was the model number, 1500 Alpine Glacier Series greenhouse, which was $5,000 that they constructed. Come winter, it collapsed completely under the weight of the snow. And I'll read, "When we began our journey into the high alpine wilderness, we knew we wanted a greenhouse, but had very little practical experience. I did some basic research and found a reasonably priced greenhouse kit with 2-inch tubing and the highest snow load available. For around $5,000, we got a massive 1,500 square foot Alpine Glacier Series conventional greenhouse. The instructions and setup were relatively easy, and we were well on our way to food security. Alas, the adventure truly begins. The first year went swimmingly, and we grew tons of food in raised beds and directly in the ground. We were proud of our efforts, and even though winter was setting in, the harvests were abundant. As the snows began to fall, I began by removing all snow from the structure and perimeter to prevent damage. For a period of time, I couldn't even access the greenhouse, and over 10 feet of snow built up on it. Because of the high amount of daily freeze and thaw, a glacier of sorts formed on either side of the greenhouse, which became impossible to remove. Encased in its sarcophagus, the snows continued to pile up until the stress was too much and the structure began to fail. In order to save the greenhouse, a friend and I set to work reinforcing the interior with massive beams to hold up the walls. It worked. Using a 4-ton shop jack, we were able to shore up the entire structure with 4x6 beams the entire length of both walls. We had done it. Fast forward to winter 2016-2017, and our access to the greenhouse became cut off around mid-January due to the snowpack exceeding 10 feet. We crossed our fingers and hoped for the best. The snows continued to pile up, with over 25 feet of total accumulation, maybe more. Unfortunately, volumes of snow in this magnitude were simply too much for the reinforced structure, and massive failure occurred. The lessons learned here are invaluable. Do not use a conventional greenhouse where snow may accumulate and removal will be too cost-effective or impossible. Too ineffective, I think. Always remove the film if you are in this situation. Only rigid greenhouses are practical to weather the conditions we were facing and are worth the additional investment. David is now developing, designing, and installing various rigid geothermally heated greenhouse designs we will be using to move forward. These structures are crush-proof and harvest the sun's energy, storing it in the ground for use later in maintaining proper temperature levels. So the climate battery there. And you can stay tuned to his updates for future solar greenhouse designs on the Oppenheimer Ranch channel, which again, I recommend. He's doing some great work there. And because he's at, I think, 9,000 feet in the Colorado high desert, he's basically already an Ice Age farmer. And so everyone can learn a lot by watching them. And that's it for the ground reports. Let me know if you've been experiencing any, I mean, there are plenty of examples of crazy climate situations that are already occurring. So if you are having problems with your already established methods or things that you expected to work or not, let me know. These are ground reports, damage reports, and things that help us refine our strategies to make them more resilient going forward, just as David just exemplified. Thank you for that, David. And with that, let's get into the news. Now, I rarely cover geopolitical or, in general, human-style events, but in this case, I just think this is really important and indicative of what we're experiencing. The crackdown on both right and left sites, and even people that don't really fall into either category, Luke Gradowski, for instance, indicates that we are currently seeing the establishment clamp down on any message that does not jive with what they want people to believe. This indicates to me, I mean, when we are experiencing a summer that is cold, that is 20 degrees on average colder than it was 70 years ago, then it makes sense. People would be saying, this is pretty weird. We should be talking about this and maybe even wondering what's going on here. And so how do you preclude that conversation from taking place? Well, you stir up a race war and geopolitical tensions worldwide to make sure that everyone is completely afraid of North Korea's nukes or at each other's necks. Facebook is just a disgusting place to be, at least for me in the US perspective right now, because everyone is saying that white people are terrible, and it's just insane. And they are really, as they are ratcheting up the distractions, they are, it seems, completely removing the ability for anyone who's looking for answers to find them. And this is a problem. It's a problem that we, as individuals, can only overcome by putting out the information to our own networks, to our own friends and family, so that that information is still available to them, although it's harder to find if they were searching for it themselves without the context that we have. And then secondly, by ignoring all of this nonsense, by staying focused on the preparations that you and your family are making for the future, on growing your own food, on securing your homestead, and moving if you need to do that, and remaining emotionally centered. Just don't let this stuff get to you. Because we can't afford to. We have too much to do. And I don't want to talk about how Charleston looks like a false flag. You know, these protesters were kettled together by the police into a tight space, and then the police stood down. It looks terrible. It looks ridiculous. And I would have, you know, years ago, I would have loved to talk about that. But right now, as I'm saying, we have more important things to discuss. And I only mentioned it here to illustrate that they're ratcheting up everything, that the distractions are reaching astronomical proportions. And you may or may not believe that they're going to attempt to remove the president of the United States, the sitting president, democratically elected. If they do so, and I think there's a chance they do, it will be because it's an amazing distraction, because it's unheard of, it's unprecedented in history. It is the downfall, gradual though it's been, of the city upon a hill. And, you know, the entire world will be completely just aghast and agog at what's going on. And so I think, you know, I don't for a second mean to imply that these distractions are not dangerous ones. They are real. The risks here are real, even if it's concocted, contrived, scripted from the top down by psyops divisions and dark, smoky rooms, I'm sure. But let's leave it there, I think. Because the crop losses that we are seeing as the season concludes here are astounding and alarming and really drive home the importance of immediately investing in your own ability to produce food, even if you're only worried about your the food prices. Well, even if you think that this is as bad as it's going to get and the food prices are jumping up, let's go ahead and dig in. We'll see. In the United States, in the South, the peach harvest, and we had seen indicators that these things were not going well before, but it's the end of the season now, and we can say with certainty that basically the peach harvest has completely failed. And this is a problem that extends into the economic situation because, you know, thousands of workers would come in to harvest these things and slice them up and put them into various products. Ontario as well has been hit really hard by heavy rains and the flooding that results from that. Crop losses are off the charts there. Over here in Europe, apples and pears are already really pricey because of the late frosts. And as these numbers come in, Belgian farmers experiencing a 68% estimated loss of their apples, as well as 7% down on their pears. Poland experiencing a massive shortage of apples, down 75%. The Netherlands, their apples and pears harvesting less than 50% of what they were hoping for. In Serbia, the Lucifer heat wave destroyed nearly 60% of crops, from corn to sunflower, mostly corn. A lot of farmers there were already over-leveraged on debt, and so this spells certain economic devastation for them beyond the economic problems that everyone else who is attempting to purchase that corn is now going to be feeling. These crop losses, as you've just seen, are around the world. There is no other country who's having a great year from whom we can import to replace. Here's something very odd. Sea level actually changing on either side of South America. So from the East Coast, Brazil and Uruguay, the ocean was receding as if there were an incoming tsunami. In fact, people were very freaked out for good reason. The ocean just decides to move out. Boats are left capsized on the ground, the dry ground, as if there's a tsunami coming in. But there was no such tsunami. It just went away. Yet on the other side of South America, Chile was experiencing giant tides. So what's going on here? Does anyone have any ideas? I'd love to hear about it. iceagefarmer@gmail.com. What do you think? Rains, floods, landslides, mudslides. We saw hundreds perish in Sierra Leone. 45 additional fatalities in India, who just continues to get nailed by. They are really having a rough summer. And then Iran also having extensive rainfall. These are the sort of atmospheric compression events that just dump a deluge of rain, and that causes the ground isn't able to handle it, and that's what causes these situations. The hail, reports of giant and damaging hail have continued. Here's a shot from such hail in Kansas. And then it's not just wet conditions. Here we see in Ethiopia, there's a drought that is resulting in over 2 million animals perishing. The reports of extensive lightning, the atmospheric, the increasing electrified atmosphere has resulted in further fatalities. Crazy lightning in China, 4 people killed, plus multiple cattle in the same strike. And similarly in India, several children were killed, and others standing nearby were burned. These are pretty alarming lightning strikes. In Finland, we saw some winds that were literally so strong that the equipment was unable to measure it. It returned error. It says that's not a real wind. With this, what we're seeing now can't be possible. So it just we weren't even able to get an accurate reading on it because the sensors just malfunctioned under those conditions. And then, as I mentioned earlier, plague has been detected in fleas in Arizona. Here's RT's coverage. Jill Elizabeth confirms this. She lives in the area and mentions that several locals over the last few years have died to this. By the way, Jill Elizabeth is doing fantastic work and is another researcher on the Grand Solar Minimum and the changing climate that you should check out her work. I also want to thank McGowan, who reached out and alerted me to Thieves essential oil, which is actually a combination of clove, lemon, cinnamon, eucalyptus, and rosemary. And the story there is that during the bubonic plague in the medieval times, there were bands of thieves who ran around stealing things from folks who were suffering or who had perished due to the plague. And somehow they seemed to be immune to the plague. And it was because, it turns out, they used this particular combination of essential oils to get around. So that's something to check out if you're concerned about bubonic plague, which I wouldn't... I mean, that's the thing. It sounds funny. A lot of these things just... they sound so absurd that they aren't to be believed. And yet, they are happening now. And so we really need to adjust our thinking. It's just like when I say, I want to look into farming crickets for protein. It sounds ludicrous and almost hilarious. But given what's going on, I think we are required to shift our perspective and change the way we think about some of these things. Doing so could indeed ensure our survival in the times ahead. And I will have links in the show notes to all of these articles that we've mentioned here. All right, with that, let's move on to an abbreviated special. There's a lot that I want to cover that I've been able to find with respect to electroculture, and a few people have been sending me some tips on this, and I appreciate that, especially Sean, thanks very much. Most people assume that a plant needs specific set of things, right? Some set of circumstances for the seed to germinate, and then as long as you give it nutrients and water and light to grow, that you'll get a plant out of it. Seems simple enough, right? It's agriculture. But what if that wasn't actually the entire story? Many of us have already heard about the rotary gardens, the Omega Garden, which inspires a plant to grow more rapidly by constantly forcing it to adjust to changes in its gravity. It's rotating the plant around a light source. So the plant is constantly trying to right itself and using a hormone, and that means that the plant will grow more quickly. But indeed, there are other tested methods over the years. It's interesting because these kinds of studies have gone on for hundreds of years and are completely new to most of us. Thomas Hieronymus discovered that a plant could be grown, check this out, in complete darkness if it were connected by an insulated wire to a large metal surface that was exposed to sunlight. So the plant has to be 6 feet above the ground and it needs to be insulated so that there's a voltage potential, sort of an antenna effect. But this isn't, I mean, that's amazing. It's not actually the photon light source. It's not the light that does this. You also you'll have to play with the size of the metal sheet. If it's too big connected to the plant, then the plant will sunburn. And if it's too little, then the plant will yellow, just as if it's not getting enough light. But I find this fascinating. And when we're talking about, in fact, when we've seen pictures of the hailstorms just leaving trails of damage through crops, this might be something that's worth investigating. Because a metal sheet that can absorb the sun's energy and deliver it as a proxy to the plant could be able to withstand the 100-mile-an-hour descending large hail, whereas the plants are just getting crushed. So if we can put the metal sheets out there as a proxy and then deliver that voltage to the plants, that's a viable way to sort of grow indoors without using any power for light. Really interested in some of that. There's also research by Wilhelm Reich, who is well known for his work on orgone. He also noted that plants could be grown in complete darkness if they were grown near magnetite that had been exposed to sunlight. And so it's like that large metal surface that was exposed to sunlight before, except this is, the magnetite actually acts as like a sunlight battery that absorbs the sun's energy and then re-radiates it in the presence of the plants in a way that is perfectly acceptable to them. This is amazing. There are plenty of experiments using various voltages, AC and DC, and I'll link to a document in the show notes with some of those. But I found these even more surprising. And also a method that is named sonic bloom, with massive growth documented as a result of using this technique. It delivers, I believe it was a 4 to 5 hertz carrier wave, and then some modulations, as well as a combination of a plant growth hormone and nutrient solution. And just the things that come out of this are insane. So, as I mentioned, I have to really cut this section short. I would like to, and I still intend to, get a lot more information on these plant hacks, growth hacking, as they call it, in the startup scene in Silicon Valley. I mean, that's with respect to acquiring users for your dog Facebook startup or whatever it is. But growth hacking on plants, I think, is even more interesting. And we are now required to think of some interesting creative solutions. As I said, if we can get the plants out of the way of the hail, but put metal out there as a proxy to get the energy from the sun, I think this is potentially promising. And so I didn't want to leave this out completely, even though it's a little bit of an underdeveloped section, because I wanted to call out for feedback. Has anyone done any experiments with these sorts of methods or with electroculture? Please get in touch. I'd love to hear about it. IceAgeFarmer@gmail.com, and we will share that with the community. All right, with that, let's get on to the single question that I'll be taking today before I need to get back to stuff here. And that is this. Oh, actually, I did want to mention, if you have questions, do send them in to me, icehfarmer@gmail.com, or I've added a voice message button on icehfarmer.com, which you can use to record a question, and I'll be able to share that. So feel free to go to the website and be the first caller to the Ice Age Farmer podcast. I'd love to hear from you. Today, Ralph writes in with a question about Bitcoin, as well as, actually, there have been plenty of comments about, don't trust Bitcoin, it's a scam, it's a farce, it's just another way of locking you into the electronic grid and the banks and the governments. And I even saw somebody calling the blockchain the beast system. Without speaking to that, the essence of the question here is, do I trust Bitcoin? Or am I just trading it? Because I have mentioned that I've mined and owned for some time Bitcoin, since it was under a dollar, actually. The short answer is, I don't trust anything at this point. I certainly don't trust any of the fiat currencies or anything that you can find backed by a state or the Rothschilds banks. And no more, I guess a little bit more than that, you could say I trust the blockchain technology. But when we're looking at a situation here where there is imminent failure of the energy systems and the agricultural systems, I guess there's a chance that these Bitcoin, that you could keep these and then hope that things are going to be available in the future where the power comes back on and you can use them. And, the real answer here is that I am all about diversifying. I'm about diversifying our sources of food, which is why we need to grow our own food, both indoors, outdoors, with metal plates attached to the sun, whatever we can figure out, I'm totally up for it. And so having a small percentage of your assets in crypto doesn't seem any less prudent to me than keeping all of your money in dollars or in euros. I mean, any of these things could disappear or be devalued overnight, or disappear completely, go to zero. All fiat currencies have always gone to zero. That's just the way, that's the reality of the situation. That's what fiat means. It only has value because of the policy. So in the spirit only of diversifying, then I think, sure, it's prudent to have Bitcoin. It's clear that the state is increasingly backing it. And, the large banks have all put in, mostly into Ripple, actually. have been sponsoring their and moving their international clearing to RIP to these blockchain transactions. So the state is going into crypto, which tells me that in terms of the long game, it's probably going to be around to stay, but it's going to be highly volatile. You know, I would not at all advocate taking your entire savings and putting it in there. And of course, as always, I am not a financial services professional, and I'm not giving you financial advice. That's just, as they say, my two cents. All right. That has been the show for today. I wanted to share with you briefly the book of the day. I went ahead and made Mike Oler's $50 and Up Underground House book, the book of the day. Although you can find, as I mentioned, a PDF available for free from archive.org. I'm going to include a link to the book on Amazon.com. It's just a great introduction on building earth berm constructions. And then for the item of the day, because my plants are so regularly affected, especially at this time of year, my cukes and zooks always pick up some white powder mildew, and I just hate this stuff. It's an annoyance. So having recently learned that you are able to boost the immune systems of your plants by supplementing with silicate, I wanted to draw attention to that and then actually provide a link to pick up a pound of that for only $19. And that pound of silicate, potassium silicate, will go a long way for you. Just to mix a tiny bit in when you're potting those plants or feeding them in the first place. And throughout the season, they will be more resistant both to white powder mildew and in general to pests and beyond. So let me know if you've got experience with that or what you think. I hope it works for you. And I hope you got something out of the show. If you did, please pass on the word about the show to your friends and family. Let them know what's going on, that we are entering a time of solar hibernation and drastically changing climate extremes, as we saw in the news, extremes highs and lows, dries and wets. And it's just going to get crazier and crazier from here as the climate disruption continues to amplify. So the time is now to take your food production into your own hands and start preparing now to ensure your family's security in the times ahead. With that, this has been episode 9 of the Ice Age Farmer Podcast. Mapping a path forward to prosperity, building resilient, self-sufficient communities, and sharing knowledge in the grand solar minimum. Let's go build a future, folks.